Hello, and thanks for joining us for Healthcare on the Rocks Employee Benefits with a Twist. I'm Jennifer Jones, Population Health Practice Leader at Springbuck.
And I'm Mike Pattingale, Senior Account Executive for Channel Sales. Jen and I are excited about today's guest, who is a leading voice in the world of healthcare innovation for employers. Dr. Ron Leopold brings more than 20 years of self-insured employer marketplace experience to healthcare innovator clients. He is recognized in the industry for thought leadership in employee benefits, human capital, population health, and productivity.
Prior to launching his own consulting business, Dr. Leopold's roles included Vice President of Integrated Benefits at MetLife, National Practice Leader for Health and Productivity at Wells Fargo, National Practice Leader for Employee Benefits, Medical Cost Solutions, and Vendor Management at Willis Towers Watson, and Chief Medical Officer at Lockton. And since May of 2021, he has been a physician advisor for the EHIR Innovation Roundtable. So many accomplishments here, but Dr. Leopold, thanks so much for joining the show with us today.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here.
As I just mentioned, you've had quite the illustrious career at some large healthcare and commercial organizations, as well as at very prominent brokers, consultants, and advisors. So what are some of the macro trends you're seeing in the employee benefit space?
So I had the opportunity to review Springbuck's 2022 employer health trends, and you focused on four, and I think all four are ones that I would have mentioned. The four that you mentioned were COVID's impact on all of this, the burden of specialty diseases, telemedicine utilization, and point solutions. And I think the way that I might put it is the following. If we think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were focused on very different things. What we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years, even in the last 10 years, is a juggernaut of costs from specialty medicines. Usually wonderful medicines with great cures, but that come at a significant cost. And I think your study and others have focused on that. And whereas the split between medical and pharma used to be that we spent some of our time on utilization of pharmacy and prescriptions and generics and mail order versus retail, specialty medicine is just blowing everything out of the water from a cost perspective. The second thing that I would say is COVID-19 has just changed everything. Overnight, or really in what was probably a 2 to 4 week period, this country went from experimenting with telemedicine and virtual care to adopting it as part of a survival mechanism. And everybody that all of us in the industry that have known about telemedicine, all of those functions started to be used as a result of COVID for all the right reasons across the board. And they've not gone away. Some of the ways that they're being utilized are different, but everybody now is comfortable with telemedicine and virtual care as a way of interacting with the physicians. And in fact, just as we've learned to interact with one another in business communications through Zoom calls, we're finding the same thing in terms of when and how we want to go see the doctor. The last piece that I'll focus on is point solutions. It used to be that employers worked with brokers and consultants to identify the insurance carrier, whether it's a fully insured or self-insured arrangement, to provide all of those services and all of the services that they would expect to get in health and wellness. What we're seeing now is a proliferation of point solutions, where, as a result of new technologies, new processes, particular reason to focus on a particular condition or functionality, we're seeing a plethora of point solutions that can deliver far more consistent, regular, intensive, broad, and deep support for folks with different conditions or different situations than the carrier ever could. And so we're seeing, in addition to working with insurance carriers, we're seeing a hub and spoke model out there where more and more employers are recognizing that if I can create an ecosphere of a hub vendor that is central and able to bring in a lot of different spoke or point solutions, I can do better for my population. Those are some of the things that come to mind top level.
Yeah, and I know we'll touch on the point solutions and all the good stuff associated with that a little bit later in our interview. But one additional question before we get to that, in thinking about with Springbuck, as far as we are predominantly working with commercial populations, but I know a lot of the literature that's out there and a lot of research I know that you have referenced as well is focus more around the Medicare population. And in your opinion, what are really some of those key differences between commercial population versus Medicare population as we think about a lot of those macro trends?
The industry has always been very hungry for data. Springbuck is in the data analytics and the access to data business. And my entire career has involved really interfacing with those data. And the data that are currently available come from CMS. So it's Medicare and Medicaid. And Medicare has defined what we pay hospitals, how we look at the overall burden of disease. But the fact of the matter is, for our commercial populations, employer-sponsored benefits, these are working-age individuals and their families, and they are not typically folks in their late 60s, 70s, and 80s. So we know that the majority of any individual's medical costs are going to come once they've reached the age of 65 or of Medicare eligibility. So a lot of the data that's out there and a lot of the claims about what's driving medical costs in this country are heavily skewed to that particular population, which is very different from a working population where neonatal and congenital anomalies are a huge driver of costs, where mental health and behavioral health are a much greater driver of cost, where certain conditions, asthma, certain types of cancers are either far more prevalent or have greater morbidity than they do in that Medicare population. So I do think it's important for all of us to always question, where's the data coming from? And if you're in the business that we are, recognize that our business is for a working age population and working age family population.
And I think, as you mentioned, some of those primary cost drivers for the given populations, what would you say are key ways that employers could go about tackling those cost drivers?
There's a couple of ways of thinking about cost drivers. One is, what are driving the very high costs? So $50,000 claims and beyond. So there, the plays are for three or four big areas. Specialty medicines, then the groups of conditions and diseases that often are utilizers of specialty medicines is one. Neonatal and congenital anomalies, premature infants born, etc., are a huge driver of cost. If we're just looking at the very high costs, the 5% of the population that drive 50% of the costs, those are the things that we should be looking at. Cancer as another one, and the strategies specifically for cancer, which we can get into later on as we have this discussion. And then I would add a few other things, such as chronic kidney disease requiring dialysis and transplant, as well as back surgeries and some of the resulting spinal morbidity and pathology around catastrophic injuries for back pain. If you step back, though, and you look at it from a prevalence perspective, so not just where are my very high claimants, but what are the conditions that may have broader prevalence, then I would extend that out to looking at things like behavioral health, looking at psychiatric, looking at things like diabetes, cardiac disease, and hypertension, although that one is the notorious driver that starts in our age group, but really mushrooms in a Medicare population.
It's so interesting because, again, traditionally we have seen chronic disease develop much further on in life. And when I think certainly those top drivers that you mentioned as far as with the commercial population, we definitely see that with a lot of our groups. But what we're also seeing is the diabetes, the hypertension, and all those chronic conditions show up much earlier in populations than I think what we're used to seeing from 10, 20 years ago or so. And is that really what you're seeing? And do you anticipate that we'll start to see much more of those chronic conditions show up as top cost drivers for, I should say, more consistently as far as with commercial populations because of this increase in prevalence?
We're seeing some behaviors start to dissipate, but we're seeing one trend that's really driving, Jen, I think what you were talking about. Smoking is still around and it's still a big problem, but it's no bigger a problem today than it was 10 years ago. What has really gone through the roof is obesity, and obesity is driven from the convenience convenience of cheaper, faster food, the high calories in the food. Look at any television commercial for a restaurant and they're pouring sauces on fatty meats and then adding cheese and bacon. And we're just inundated with that. And if you compare the United States to many other industrialized or OECD nations, you're going to see a big difference. Although that's starting to narrow. And unfortunately, our way of life is starting to creep into Western Europe and some of the other countries that make up the OECD. So we are seeing obesity fuel certain things. And that's going to be diabetes at a much earlier age. And then to some degree, heart disease, certainly hypertension at an earlier age. And then things like asthma increase significantly in an obese population, especially a younger obese population. And then finally, musculoskeletal injuries, back problems, hip problems, knee problems in particular are the areas that have the greatest impact by obesity. Adding pounds adds pressure to all of that. So those are some of the areas that we are starting to see increase over time in younger populations.
And obesity is, I think, so tricky. So my background as a registered dietitian, obviously, I've worked with a lot of individuals as far as with weight loss, weight management. And I think we still see such a limited amount of coding and diagnosis around obesity. And it's one of those conditions where we'll treat the diabetes, we'll treat the heart disease. But as you were talking about kind of the wheel and spoke model, at the core of all that oftentimes is obesity. Why do you think there's such an aversion to talking about it, treating it, and trying to find solutions for obesity itself?
So I don't know that there's an aversion to it. Certainly, I know that it's difficult to pin down. And I think this dovetails into some of the functionality that Springbuck is forwarding. So if you were to just look at medical and pharmacy claims, it would be very tough to capture obesity. Once there's a level of morbid obesity, you may see the doctors starting to, or the medical providers starting to code specifically for obesity. But as we start to tie in other data sets, and certainly the industry has been tying in biometric data a lot more commonly these days than in the past, that's where some of the real value is. That's where employers, by looking at their data, are able to see on a population basis the rates of obesity and morbid obesity and tying that into some of the cost increases that you were alluding to. I think it's a data play to some degree. I think now that more and more employers are able to use the biometric data that they get and pair it with what's actually happening there in terms of utilization of medical services, diagnoses, and then overall costs, I think you could really make the case to go a lot more aggressively towards obesity.
And that's really a nice segue kind of into this discussion around point solutions and using some third-party vendors. You had mentioned as far as our 2022 Employee Health Trends report, where we did discuss a component of that as far as where we're seeing a lot more of even mid-sized to large groups really that are going out on their own and trying to work with solutions outside of more of the traditional carrier model. And I know you have a similar article that discusses the involvement and the impact and really the importance of point solutions as well. So why do you think we're seeing this particular trend, and how do you think that plays into the broader employer strategy around wellness and controlling healthcare costs?
I think what a healthcare carrier focuses on, what the health insurance companies can or can't do, prevents them from really focusing on some of the things that employers have always needed. I think as a result of looking at employer medical and pharmacy data, employers are starting to see a whole lot of opportunities that in the past have not been addressed. The health insurance carriers traditionally have been ineffective with their disease management, their case management, care management, and wellness programs, partially because plan members may not trust the health plan to deliver those sort of things. And so a third party becomes a lot more palatable to a potential member who might get value out of any of the programs I just named. And then second is the proliferation of technologies, communication technology, digital technologies, digital therapeutics, creativity and entrepreneurism in this space, and the tremendous opportunity that the self-insured employer market space offers has created a haven for innovation. And so what we're seeing, and a lot of the work that I do in my consulting, are seeing folks out there who see this employer market, recognize that there's a lot of good work that could be done. And I think one of the most important messages that I have for them is understand this marketplace, and it's not all about just what the insurance company pays for or doesn't pay for. It's more about what kind of value can you bring? What is your solution, and how might that coordinate or integrate with what the employer or the plan member, the employee or their family member, gets from their insurance carrier? For my money, that's the groundswell change that we're living through right now.
I know earlier you had talked about folks leveraging biometric screenings. What type of third-party vendors are you seeing being utilized the most today?
It's all over the place. I think, take the question, Mike, if it's okay, from a data perspective, where is the data being integrated? So on-site health clinics is the first one that comes to mind. Wellness programs and condition management programs. You're able to identify, let's just take diabetes condition management. I can see all my diabetics, who participated, who didn't. I can do a risk stratification and do an equal match to high-risk participant, high-risk non-participant, and start to compare those. So condition management and on-site health clinics are the first two that really come to mind. Smaller programs that have a more narrow focus are also doing that, but those are the two that come to mind.
Yeah, and I know we've seen just dozens, if not thousands, of digital health vendors pop up, especially during the pandemic. And it's been great to see, just as you mentioned before, the creativity and some of the innovation that has come along to really solve for needs within the marketplace, leveraging technology and benefiting from the forcing of folks to be remote. I'm curious if you see any sort of gap or opportunity for some additional innovation or solution to take place in the market.
So there always is. Two areas of interest for me, and I think that these are ripe areas. The first is the intersection of virtual care and telemedicine with expert medical opinion. Right now, we still view seeing a specialist as driving downtown, parking in the parking lot, going up in the waiting room, waiting to see the doctor. They don't validate for parking. You interact with them, go back down, and you drive home. And I think with digitization of records, electronic health records, a better ability to summarize medical, somebody with a serious condition should be able to interact and access medical experts far more readily. I've worked with one company that's doing that with cancer, and I would expect that for certain conditions, immunologic conditions, certainly rheumatology, dermatology, etc., there's a huge opportunity to make sure that if you're the employer sponsor, that every one of my plan members can access the best, whether or not they're in network or whether or not there's another financial arrangement to enable folks with serious disease to really access that. So I think that merging of expert medical opinion and virtual care is one area. The other area is in precision medicine. And so there, what we're starting to see is the technology is exploding around what your genetic makeup, there's three of us on this podcast, but each of our genetic makeup can tell us about an individual. So it might be that we're seeing a lot of work around polygenic risk scores, the difference between your genetic makeup of the three of us in terms of risk for developing cardiac disease, risk for developing cancer, risk for having a certain variety of aggressive cancer. That's one area. Second is early diagnosis of certain diseases. And then the third is how we respond to medicine. So pharmacogenomics is an area. So the two areas, just to recap, one is the convergence of expert medical opinion and virtual care, more seamlessly, broader, more easily done, reduce the friction. And then the other is leveraging what we're learning on the genomic side of the house and precision medicine side of the house and making that more readily available.
All very interesting. And we recently announced a partnership with Included Health for that core EMO service, which I think being able to bring that down market for mid-size market, where in the past that has been certainly catered more towards the enterprise market. But to your point, as far as allowing an employee or any member on your plan to have access to thousands of different specialists that can give them a second opinion. And I know where we've seen a tremendous amount of benefit from those types of services is also around MSK, in addition to cancers and everything else that you mentioned too, which if you can not have to have a surgery, that's obviously a huge cost savings, but also you just think about the productivity and the life of the individual as well. And the precision medicine, I think, is really interesting too, because we have had some recent discussions with some of our clients around that specifically. And I know there's still a lot of red tape around getting FDA approval for some of the specific tests that they were looking at as far as being able to roll them out from a broad spectrum perspective. But I think those are just really fascinating topics that we'll continue to hear a lot about, because we have this much more easy from a more of a virtual care perspective that people have access to a lot of these types of things rather than having to sit in front of a physician in an office.
Our world changes faster and faster, but some things never change. But yeah, we're right now in the throes of, I hate the term paradigm shift, but as we really start to look at all of the different point solution players and the way that they can be coordinated in a vendor ecosphere, there's tremendous opportunity there.
And I think even when you then begin to think about how that plays into health equity and SDOH, someone doesn't have to go and be transported to a specific facility as far as if they can access this in their home. It just expands the opportunities, I think, to those that who it may have been cost prohibitive or, again, an access to care issue in the past. So there's always that benefit and flip of the coin, too. That's a whole other discussion.
Technology and access to care are two of the fundamental drivers that are going to improve our ability to get to the goal of health equity.
So as we see more employers starting to leverage technology and maybe a digital health vendor for the first time, and they're starting to get the hang of it and trying to roll it out for their population, how well do you think these employers are able to monitor the program utilization and even know if they're getting the value on their investment that they were seeking for? And I guess what could help them do that better?
Two components are necessary. One is, can that vendor provide de-identified but individual-specific information to their client, their customer, which is the employer? And then, therefore, can that employer work with data and analytics capability to merge that with other data? So that really is the key to the kingdom. And there are many employers, there are many other players in that whole chain of connections that I just described that are not able to do it, unwilling to do it, or haven't prioritized. But if you can really understand who's participating and what's happening with them and how do they compare to non-participants, especially non-participants that have been matched with regards to severity of disease, for instance, you have a real opportunity to prove what's actually happening and what that digital vendor is doing. But without the data, that's really difficult. Now, you can learn a lot from utilization data and just look at that. But I think that, as I said, I think the real value is being able to pair it and then look at subsequent use. And most point solutions speak to reduction of ER visits, reduction of hospital days, reduction of transition of level one to level two, let's say treatment and medication, as evidence of their efficacy. And you need data to do that.
Always starts and ends with data.
Yes. But I will say this, not everything that can be measured matters, and not everything that matters can be measured. However, there's a whole lot that we can measure if we're smart and understand. This requires both looking at the data and then really thinking through cause and effect. So correlation isn't causation. And so applying some of that to how you look at data, I think is important.
Yeah, if only there was a really easy to use data analytics platform out there that help people with this.
Gee, Scarecrow, what would you do if you had a brain?
On that note, Dr. Leopold, this has been such an incredibly insightful conversation. And once again, we really thank you for sharing your expertise. This has just been a fascinating conversation.
happy to be here. Thanks for hosting, and it's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much. And that is it for another episode of Healthcare on the Rocks, Employee Benefits with a Twist. Thanks for listening. There are a lot of good one-liners and quotes in there. If you enjoyed this episode, and really, how could you not, take a moment to rate us or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. You'll be helping other people find the show. Be sure to leave a comment on what other topics you would like us to cover. Until next time, cheers.